The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 30th of November, 2020. On the podcast today, Michael Goldstein, Chief Executive Officer of City of London Group. And Michael discusses the interim results and explains why he's confident on the outlook. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, who was 60 over the weekend. Happy birthday, Alan. Talks about i3 Energy, Kavango Resources, and Myriad Advertising. And as always, at the end of the podcast, as always, I highlight two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 visions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see lots of other content, including an article there on Escapement to reopen sites after strong progress amid lockdown. There's one there on Practice. There's another article on Gresham House. BPC, lots right there. Check it out. And of course, don't forget our COVID-19 index. Biggest rise today in the COVID-19 index is Gfinity. Nice to see. It's up, biggest fall on Friday. It's up 7.8% pretty much to 3.5. Biggest fall of the day is Novacyt, down 5.7 to 756. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Michael Goldstein, Chief Executive Officer of City of London Group. CIN is the ticker there. Michael, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Thanks for inviting me this morning.
Yeah, it's nice to get you on. So we've not had you on before, and there's always a thirst for new companies on the podcast, for people listening. And you've released your interim results today, so we'll look at those and we'll see what's coming up. Before we do, Michael, if someone's listening out there and they've never heard of City London Group, can you explain what the business is about, please?
Yes, sir. City London Group is an AIM-listed company, and we're focused on financial services to the SME, to SME businesses. And particularly, we've invested in our 100% subsidiary, Recognize, which got its banking license within the last couple of weeks. And it will be providing, and it is now providing, loans to the SME sector.
Oh, okay, cool. And like I said, you published your interim results this morning. Give us some of the highlights, if you could.
Well, there's really a few highlights. Really, the big highlight is that in October, we completed our recent fundraise, where we raised £27 million. And that money will be invested into Recognize, which will facilitate its development in terms of becoming a bank, providing, as I said, those SME loans to the SME sector. We're basically investing in that. It's a major milestone that the company has got to in terms of receiving its license from the Bank of England from the 10th of November 2020, so just a couple of weeks ago. We've made a small loss in terms of the operating businesses, but basically all of our intention now is investing into Recognize, our new bank.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, give us a bit more detail. Like you say, you've raised a decent chunk of money there, £27 million. What exactly specifically will you be using that for then?
Well, initially, the majority of that money will be used to lend out. Mm-hmm. So we are now making loans to the SME sector. We basically have a concentration limit. We will lend up to £5 million to any one customer. But our sweet spot is somewhere really between £500,000 and £2 million. So that's what that money is being used for the next few months.
Yeah, I see. And you mentioned they recognize they achieved authorization with restriction from the PRA. What does that mean for the business? And you know, what is Recognize's mission here, Michael?
Okay, so what that means is that Recognize is now a bank, or we now have a bank, mm-hmm. But actually we are restricted what, in terms of what we can do for the next few months. So probably for a period of up to 6 months, we won't be able to take deposits from customers. So what a bank does, it takes deposits from customers. And up to £85,000 per customer is guaranteed by the Bank of England. So we can't do that for the next few months, but we anticipate being able to do that in the first half of next year. So we're restricted in respect of our activities. So we have to go through what they call a mobilization period where our systems are tested. And once we get through that position, then the Bank of England will then say, you now have a full banking license and you can now take deposits. And then we really will be then working on our business plan, which is to build a loan book of over £1 billion in the first 4 years.
Wow. And that's the aim there. And I mean, it's a lofty aim, but are you confident?
We are confident. I think the market is very difficult for businesses in that particular part of the economy at the moment. I think the big banks are really consumed with the difficulty that they have in their existing loan book. And I think they're much more internally focused. I think you've only got to read the press to talk about how difficult it is for many businesses to get decent loan facilities. So we do think that the market is in a position where it needs us at this particular juncture. And hopefully by the time we get out of mobilization period in the first half of next year, the vaccine would have been fully, you know, rolled out across the country. And hopefully the economy will get back to the sorts of levels that we saw at the beginning of 2020.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, by this time next year, hopefully we'll be back to normal pretty much. But you are generally, for the whole of the group, you're feeling like you're in the right, you know, heading in the right direction and you're optimistic for the future?
Yeah, we are optimistic. It's a very, very difficult process to get a banking license. Mm. You know, we basically set our stall out 3 years ago. It's taken us 3 years to get to this particular juncture. We've invested a significant amount of money so that we're able to be here. We know the bar is really probably raising all the time, so we think finding more competitors into this space is unlikely. So we'll be one of the first banks to come into this sector post-COVID. And we really do believe that it's a very big market opportunity for us.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, Michael, on the podcast every day, I highlight the top five most followed companies. To get on that list, of course, people have to hit that follow button on your page. So if people are liking the sound of this now and the progress you're making but are not yet following the story, please give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add City of London Group to their watch list, please.
So I think what we have is a banking proposition which we believe is lacking in the market. And those three reasons are, number one, you know, businesses have had a torrid time over the last 8 months. We hope by the time we get out into the market in the first half of next year, COVID will be significantly behind us, if not totally behind us. So that's the number one reason. The second reason is that the big banks are really consumed by their existing customers and the difficulty they got in their loan books. So smaller businesses are not getting the attention that they need. So again, we will be able to give them that attention. And the third reason is, we've invested significantly in our technology. So this is a very, very state-of-the-art, cutting-edge, cloud-based system. And as a consequence of it, our cost base will be significantly lower than many of our competitors. So we see that as a major advantage that we have.
Absolutely. Michael, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Greenstocks, and he's CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al.
Greenspan, Greenstocks, whichever. Green, it's all shoots. Fun. It's all good to me.
Green bean.
It's all good to me. Mm-hmm. I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm all right, yes. I just got up this morning. I don't know if it's the same way you are, but there's like a icy frost, fog, I mean, that's hanging over the air. It makes it cooler. But it gives it a sort of more of a Christmassy feel, you know, I feel, you know?
No, I agree. It is that. I'm looking out the window. I can't actually see up the hill towards Seaford Head. It's just this low fog, but it is very cold. Lovely.
Are you sure there's a fog or is it not there with a dirty window? Give it a clean. See what's.
No. We weathered the wind a few weeks ago, so I can see all the way up, and I can only see the trees at the start of the ridge. It doesn't go all the way to the top. But
wear glasses. Give your glasses a clean.
Yes, right, yeah, that's it. I'll spray my glasses. But no, the weather was great over the weekend. You know, it's kind of watery sunshine, but just really nice. Actually sat in the sun on Saturday for about an hour and a half. It was just lovely. Yeah. And I've actually got some colour in my cheeks. So there you go.
Okay, well, yeah, the cheeks in your face, that is, yeah?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes,
so, I don't know what you get up to down there on the coast. But no, do you know what I did in the weekend? Do you know what I did in the weekend? Apart from watch Wales get beaten by England. But apart from that, parents came down and my wife made the second Christmas dinner. We've had two Christmas dinners now in the last couple of weeks. One for her parents, one for my parents. And of course, we've got Christmas dinner yet to come yet. So it's been very festive. But overeating, overdrinking, not a bad thing. I like the wheat, because I basically get back into my routine of, you know, I don't eat any sweets or desserts during the week, and I just exercise and eat relatively healthy, you know. Then on the weekend, I can let it go a bit. But I always feel quite bad after the weekend, you know.
Well, I had a great Saturday, actually. It was my birthday on Saturday, so we had a big
chance. Happy birthday, Al. How old are you?
Well, I'm getting on, mate. I'm getting on. You know, I'm edging. I'm in my 50s, pushing on, pushing higher.
You know, how old are you then?
I can't say. I can't say.
You can say, Al. You're not a lady or anything. Come on, you're a fella. Come on, how old are you?
Oh, goodness me. Well, I'm a big 60.
What is the problem? What? Are you 60?
Yeah, I hit the big 60 at the weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
You look excellent for your age, Al.
Well, it's the fresh
air. It's the Botox, isn't it? I think
it's the Botox. It's all of these. It's all of the cosmetic treatments that are available to you down here. But sea air, you know, walks every day down here. It's all good. You know, it's very healthy indeed.
Yeah, you look very good for your age, Al. Fair play. I don't see why. Why are you trying to lie then about your age? And there are some blokes who lie about their age.
I don't know. It's
you should be proud of that. You look very good for your age. You look about my age, and I'm 10 years younger than you, I think. So
that's very kind.
Yeah,
that's
so
very kind.
You're doing something right, Al. That's, you know, that's amazing.
Doing something right. Well, I think it's just the way we work down here, the way I work, and also, you know, we've got a big family. It was great on Saturday. I had a big Zoom call conference with the family.
Keep them virtual. Keeps you young.
That's right. And they all came over with cakes. I had the most amazing chocolate cake for my sister, which was fantastic. My sister and her husband, and then my daughter came over with a fantastic cheesecake. So yeah, we too have been stuffing all weekend. And
nice. Well, happy birthday. Yeah. Happy 60th. Right, let's get on to some stocks. Maybe you start becoming a good stock picker, you know.
That's right. Yeah. This is my resolution for 2021 to become a decent stock picker.
it's not an easy game, is it? That's why, you know. I just find, but anyone starting off investing, there's so many metrics, so many sort of lots of phrases, terminology. I think it's designed to confuse, you know. So then you get financial industry or financial experts, or they say that advisors will charge you to buy a fund, basically. You know, basically you can go and buy a fund. Anyone can go and buy a fund, you know. And yet financial advisors will talk a big game, talk how complicated it is, and make it as complex as possible. And they'll take your money then because you think, oh, it's too complicated for me. I can't have enough time to do that. And they'll buy a fund, you know. So, So it's not easy investing, but if you get past the terminology and you get a bit of passion for it, it's a lot easier, of course. But do it.
Well, I think it's having the ability to just look at an announcement or a piece of information and actually cut through it and just grab the salient points from the announcement, and that's it. Because there's so much jargon and terminology in the markets, any RNS that gets put out. I think there are some newer entrants into the market now. They're using terminology which is everyday terminology, so people can actually understand what they're saying. But certainly, a lot of the older ones, or a lot of the more traditional ones, should we say, are designed to confuse and baffle. You know, which is not the way it should be. Really,
when I first started in the podcast, I listened to a Barclays podcast, and this guy there with double barrel surname, I literally just went on for an hour just monologuing. And I couldn't understand I had a bit of experience about, you know, investing. This guy was confusing me. I thought, that's not the way you want to portray investing, surely. I mean, maybe Barclays do, because then you obviously do get advice from them. They get paid for it, maybe, financial advisors. There we are. Buy low, sell high is still the best bit of advice I've ever been given.
Well, that's it. And I think the thing is, you know, a lot of the older... older people sort of within the industry are happy to confuse and baffle. They want to make it seem mysterious. So hopefully you'll say, do you know what? I'm not going to step into that. I'm going to pay someone to do it for me. I'll pay you to do it for me and you can take a fat commission. Yeah. Well, no, you don't need to do that. I mean, my mission throughout my time in this sector has been to demystify the whole process. And actually, it's pretty straightforward when it comes down to it. And, you know, people get that now. And certainly years ago when I started Share Crazy, that's what it was all about. It was just about demystifying it and just getting companies to articulate information that was straightforward and easy to understand, because it ain't rocket science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having said that, the stocks we're about to mention, it's not investment advice. So
no,
they could be absolute rubbish. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know. They could indeed. They could indeed. So do your own research. But again, what we try to do here is just to take the information that's out there in the public domain and distill it down into simple bite-sized chunks that hopefully you can get a better understanding of the company and then go and do your own research.
Right, cool. First stock out, what are you talking about?
Okay, so this is a company that very much falls into that category. They conducted a very detailed transaction recently, and I think fair to say that they had disappointed a lot of investors, including me, because I'm still a shareholder in this company, and I made a lot of money initially, and probably fair to say I'm sitting about evens now because I went in later in the day when the share price fell. Nonetheless, i3 Energy is the company. i3E is the epic code, and i3E are an oil explorer, and now they are an oil producer, thanks to a recent transaction, listed on the AIM market in London. i3E is the epic code. And also, they've just recently listed on the TSX Canada exchange. The epic code over there is ITE. The two assets that i3E were known for were up to the middle of this year were, of course, the Serenity and Liberator assets in the North Sea. And some drilling took place on both assets last year. The Serenity data was more or less confirmed, but the Liberator data, I think, was something of a disappointment. Nonetheless, I'm just going to summarize those two before we go into the main transaction that's taking place this year. So on the Serenity asset in the North Sea, Block 13, 23C. In drilling, they encountered thick oil-bearing sand, and they expect an oil column of some 1,124 feet, that's a pretty impressive number across that block, which is, of course, the Blake Liberator Serenity block. Blake is already a producing field there, so i3. He bought these assets hoping that they would be more or less plug-and-play assets. i3E retained their pre-drill estimate of 197 million barrels of oil, that stock tank oil initially in place, and their drilling partner, Dolphin Drilling, is to earn up to 10% via a net revenue sharing agreement. So that's still very much on the launch pad. But obviously, given the COVID crisis, given the movement in oil this year, that's very much on the back burner at present. We then move to Liberator. Again, two blocks adjacent to Blake, 24 feet of net pay at the top of a column of thick oil-bearing sand, some 300 feet high. And they've said at Liberator, I3 said there's capacity for a small phase one development at Liberator of up to three wells. Again, a drilling partner, Dolphin, will earn up to 10% via a revenue net sharing agreement. And a farm out process is currently underway at Liberator. So really, that's where we're at to date. But that's i3e have substantially shifted from explorer to producer now, and this came about through an opportunity to buy a company called Toscana Energy, listed on TSX. Toscana owed something like 28 million Canadian dollars, and had basically broken its covenants and was in the poo financially. So i3E came along.
Is that a technical term, Al?
Yeah, it's a technical term. Yeah. They're in the period. Now, this consists of a getting on for 300 wells across the Canada, what's called the West Canada Sedimentary Basin, including assets in Saskatchewan and Central Canada. And I3E put together a package. They raised $29 million in August through primary bid at 5p, and the process the agreement was that they would acquire a series of assets, that's 242 operating wells, and they would acquire some other wells which would then immediately be sold to Harvard Petroleum for $45 million Canadian dollars. Now, the wells that are retained by I3 were producing just under 9,000 barrels of oil per day in June, and the portfolio of wells I3 have said are a stable, low decline legacy asset that generated $22 million of net operating income in 2019. There is estimated to be across the portfolio just under 54 million barrels of oil, and with a pre-tax net present value of some $182 million. There are also third-party custom processing and royalty agreements in place, which generated just under $4 million in 2019. So at a stroke, I3E have moved from explorer to producer, but they are now a producer explorer, so they have this steady stream of income. They've sold Toscana's legacy debt asset issue, but they've also transaction constituted a reverse takeover, so they've now reversed into Toscana, and of course they are now listed on the TSX as ITE. So the company's got a market value of 37 million sterling. Shares have traded as we know as high as 22p on the year, low as 3.3p, and they are currently on the UK market trading at 5.35p. So is it now a producer? So really, it's a question of looking at this company and saying, okay, do I believe that they can develop these North Sea assets? Well, certainly Serenity seems a good bet. They've retained the initial estimate, but they've now got revenue. They're now revenue generators, and they've, with the 242 assets they have in Canada, and of course, Toscana's debt issues have been resolved through the issues of shares to the secured lenders. So it's a complex transaction, but I3 have now come out the other end. They declared a net loss of 6.6 million sterling in June, at the end of June. But of course, the acid test is going to be the current period where we start to see the revenues from the new assets hit the bottom line. And I3 completes its evolution from just explorer into producer explorer.
Right. I've lost a bit of track there, but I bought them a while back as well, a long time, about 3 years back, I think, and did well at them. But again, the story's changed a little bit there. But what's your thoughts on oil, Al, generally macro oil?
Well, long term, of course, it's a declining asset. And you've got the oil majors like BP and Shell. I think BP is targeting, always says by 2030, 40% of its revenues will be from renewable energy and not oil. And that's a massive step.
Massive, yes, isn't it, for BP? Yeah,
It's a massive step for BP to say by any standards, but you know the CEO Ben Van Beurden is or is he Shell? He could be Shell actually. No, anyway.
Shell, yes, Ben Van Beurden. Yeah. Ben Van Beurden. Yeah.
Ben, yeah. But both of these oil giants have pledged to make that change. I mean, whether they'll achieve that or not, I don't know. But clearly they have to make that move. So in the short term, we're still going to need oil. Of course, oil will still be oil is still going to be essential to everyday life. Everyone's going electric by 2030, of course. But oil is still going to be very much a play in the near term. Now, does this provide a platform for I3 to develop its own renewable assets in the longer term? Who knows? But nonetheless, I think they've completed a good transaction here. And of course, oil demand ebbs and flows. But once we get back to work, once transport starts to return to normal, once the airlines start up again, then of course oil will be needed as much as anything else. And I3 is now a producer, so it could well see a rise in share price off the back of that.
I see, of course, like I said, longer term it's going to go downwards in price and demand. There's still demand growing slowly from developing countries, but I see a massive spike in oil price sooner or later and then a tail off. But I think, because there's been, of course, no one's investing in exploring oil anymore, but yet demand is still creeping up slowly. Only about, I think about a million barrels. What was it by? I think it's grown an average annual rate of just below a million barrels daily. So you'll have that creeping up demand, but that will top off. But of course, no one's investing in exploring. And of course, all the sovereign funds are pulling out of investing in oil. So there will be still that growing demand, and the supply will be going down. And of course, when supply goes down and demand creeps up, there's only one place it can go. But then after that, I think it's a downward spiral. I'm looking towards now new trends, like EV and all that stuff,
Indeed. I think it's it's all about, is the company a good investment at this juncture? I think that they did well to execute this deal in the climate. These are producing wells, and I think the company moves forward now unencumbered by the debt that the previous operator had. But of course, it still has the potential upside in Serenity and possibly Liberator too. I think there is everything to play for here. It's still on a fairly modest market cap, given the money it's raised and given the production from the wells going forward. I think the jury will probably be out until we start to get some data back and we start to get some numbers back from I3 as the incumbent operator.
Cool. Marvellous. What's next, Al?
Okay, so Kavango Resources. We have spoken about Kavango Resources before, and this is a mining exploration company operating in Botswana, of course, and has three core assets.
I'm just looking at a chart there on the IEA website, of course, energy website. And they've got growing demand peaking in 2021 at 2.1 million barrels, and then it's going down to 1.1, halving into 2022, and then down to just below 1 million or 0.9 in 2020. So they're seeing demand actually slowing after next year. Peaking next year, slowing down. Anyway, it's a big chart there showing that. Obviously it's a forecast, but so the peak will be next year, and it'll be half, 2.1 million barrels peak next year, the demand growth. That will go down to 1.1. Of course, that's still growth, but it's halving from 2021 to 2022. That's quite a surprise. Anyway, sorry, Al. So, Kavango, sorry, I was just apologize. Move on. Off you go. As you were.
Okay, so Kavango Resources, KAV is the epic code, has three core resources and assets in Botswana. These are the Kalahari Suture Zone, known as the KSZ. There is the Kalahari Copper Belt project and also the Ditau Camp project. And you'll have heard of some of these names through, of course, Power Metal Resources, that has joint ventures with a number of companies across Africa, and indeed is working, has joint ventures with Kavango on two of them. So I'll summarize those two briefly at the outset before I talk about the KSZ, which really is the core, it's the flagship asset that's owned and operated by Kavango. Kavango, of course, the CEO is Michael Foster, who's formerly of De Beers, Reunion Mining, Zincox, Casa and Copperbelt and others, very well regarded in the industry. And of course, Mike Moles, who was effectively the founder of Kavango, formerly of Delta Gold, Reunion, and Lawnmen. Some high caliber personnel running the company. So we have firstly the Kalahari Copper Belt, and this is a belt of copper in western Botswana that's on the what's called the Ganzi Ridge, and the deposits or sedimentary copper deposits are close to the surface. Initially, Kalahari or Kavango had a joint venture with geo explorers on two licenses, and there was a provision that Kavango had to spend $125,000 on each, with rights to spend up to additional funds up to a 90% interest. A joint venture was agreed with Power Metal Resources to basically buy into the KCB or the Kalahari Copper Belt to provide funding as a partner to develop the asset. So those are underway. There is also a joint venture with the Dissau Camp project with Power Metal Resources. Dissau Camp is in southern Botswana and consists of a number of what is termed as magnetic ring structures, which are prospective for rare earths, including neodymium, praseodymium, and they were sort of mined as far back as the 70s. And Michael Foster said in September that there is emerging evidence that Dittau is at the center of a previously unrecognized complex, so it could be much larger than had originally been thought. So those are the other two assets in Botswana. But as I said, the core asset, the flagship asset, is the Kalahari Suture Zone, which is a rock it's in the southwest of Botswana, across the western edge of the Kapville Craton, and also overlaps into South Africa. There's a lot of modelling, and the great thing about running a mining company nowadays is that a lot of modelling can be done on the desktop, 3D modelling, and obviously you can then obtain the data from aeromag surveys where the conductivity of the asset underground is measured, and an idea of the geology emerges from that, so a 3D model can be formed. And that's what they've been working on this year. But this is... geologists and independent consultants have verified that the Kalahari Suture Zone, or KSZ, is similar to the Norilsk mine in Siberia. Now, Norilsk is famous for producing 90% of Russia's nickel and well over 50% of its copper and all of its platinum group metals. It's a huge, huge asset. I think it produces up to 10% of the world's nickel. So it's an absolutely huge asset. It's similar in structure to this. And they've gone forward and modeled this during the year. And Michael Foster said that drilling would commence in 2021. And indeed, this morning they've announced that they've selected four Norilsk-style targets in the northern area of the Kalahari Suture Zone. Large loop surveys are going to be undertaken to detect what are called high-speed conductors. So that's where the metals or the metal content in the ground conducts and reveals itself on an aeromag data screen, and that will be added to the 3D model that's already been developed with Mara Geoscience in order to identify drill targets. So if we look at the share price performance of the company, Kavango still has a very low market cap of 5.8 million. Shares have gained gradually from the middle of the year, when they were trading at 1p up to the 3p where they are today. They've hit a high of 3.7p, but you know, that's a good looking chart in my book, and I think you know, given the developments, the company looks placed for a very exciting 2021. And if this is anything like as big as Norilsk, it could be an absolutely massive find. So if you're into nickel, if you're into all these the base metals and commodities, which I think make a very solid buy right now, given the amount of money that's being spent on supporting the recovery from COVID around the world, then it's a very good bet.
Is it a bet or is it an investment?
It's an investment. It's an investment. I think, but I think if I think when you look at the company like this, look at what the company have undertaken this year. Yeah, go back and look at all the news flow, and just it's just been steady development. Next step, identify the target. So they've got. If you go to the Kavango website, there are some very detailed images of asset. Yeah, so some really detailed images, from those surveys, from the data modeling. And if this thing is as big as Norilsk, I mean, it could be the find of the century. And clearly, Kavango shareholders once the drilling confirms what the data, what the Aeromag surveys, and what the consultants are telling them, then the sky literally could be the limit. And that's of course the exciting thing. Kavango.
How much? What's the ticker?
KAV.
KAV.
Kilo Alpha Victor. Yeah.
Kilo KAV.
Yeah.
Okay.
But look at that chart from the start of the year. You know, that will tell you about the building news flow. And but this, a 5.8 million market cap is nothing. You know, it's a scratch on the surface.
Of what?
Well, if this asset is what they think it is.
What surface are you scratching, Al? Yeah.
the surface of the KSZ.
Okay. Cool. All right. Marvellous stuff. Yeah. Of course, explorers in Africa come with their own unique set of risks. I would just like to say that people listening, if you're brand new to investing, be careful. I think one of the most, the most important things about small cap explorers is how much cash do they have. And they have plenty of cash, to take them through the next, they're always getting to the next sort of value generational news release. Can they get through that next bit of news,
yep.
And that could be, and I general rule of thumb, 6 to 12 months of cash is ideal. 12 months is ideal, 6 months is going to be dodgy, but there we are.
They raised $2 million on November the 10th in an oversubscribed placing. So that's they're certainly.
It's amazing how these are always oversubscribed, isn't it? These placings. I've never seen one placing from any company that's not oversubscribed. They're all oversubscribed, isn't they?
Or not subscribed.
It doesn't matter. I'm not referring to Kavango here, but it doesn't matter what tin pot company it is. They're all oversubscribed. It's a surprise how much investment money's out there. It's being thrown at any company. Yet sometimes you hear it's always hard out there. It's hard to raise some money. But then all of a sudden, they're all oversubscribed. It's really odd that. There we are. And it doesn't matter how big a discount they are, they're all oversubscribed. what's next, Al?
Okay, technology company Myriad. We've spoken about Myriad on a number of occasions. The epicode is MIRI.
Fair play, Al. It's a cracking pick from you when you first talked about this. I was a bit cynical here. I must admit that, and I've got to say, looking at the chart, I was wrong.
I bought it at 7p. I still hold, and I think this is ironically. I mean, we've said this before so many times, but it was the dual listing that really triggered the rise in the share price. And once a company dual lists, I spoke about i3 earlier. They've of course now had the TSX listing in Canada, and I think it's then you've got investors across the world, looking at it with greater interest. It automatically moves you up to the next level. But Myriad, of course, have this this incredible technology which is inserted into live programming or programming, where they can insert products or place products within the program. So the flow of the program isn't interrupted, and just you could be watching a program or a scene in the kitchen where there are some cans of Coke on the table. I see the same. I'm watching the same program, and I see cans of Pepsi. That's how the technology operates.
See, mine is a perfect sort of quality brand. Yours is a ripoff. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, yeah.
So I'd say, for example, if it's advertising alcohol, I'd see, say, a can of Strongbow cider. You'd see Baby Sham.
No, I
just just reflecting our drinking habits there. Do they still sell Baby Sham? Is Baby Sham still around? Do you remember Baby Sham?
I do.
Hey, I'll have a Baby Sham.
Well, in fact, my sister still. In fact, when she bought some drink over, she bought a bottle of Baby Shams, so they are still going. But no, I'd see a can of. I'd probably see a can of Adnams Ghost Ship Pale Ale or something like that. You know, that's my bag. But I have to say, you know, that.
For example, if it came to sort of you know, aftershave, I'd see like Hugo Boss. You'd see Brut.
Brew 33. Speaking of which, there we were watching TV last night. On comes Vinnie Jones. He's obviously the Latter-day Henry Cooper. Do you remember the old Brew?
Yeah, that's it.
So Vinnie Jones is now advertising Brew 33. Mm. It'll be Old Spice next. Good lord, you know. But back to Myriad. So it's product insertion into programming, and of course. Advertisers are now advertising agencies have the challenge of delivering greater value to their clients because everyone now hits the skip ad button and winds on or moves on and they don't watch the ads anymore. So advertisers have to find a way of delivering greater value. Myriad, of course, have developed the technology. It's big in China. They have a large contract with Tencent Video in China. They've Enterprise WeChat, China Mobile, Saint Laurent, TAL Education have all gone through those channels. They've launched trials in the UK with Channel 4, working with France TV and Condé Nast, but they've really tapped into the US. There's a huge TV ad market in the US, they are growing steadily. At the last trading update, they said that they were on target for their 2.2 million sterling on the year, and you know, that still seems lowly in comparison to the market cap, which is now at 111 million. But of course, with the US listing, that's how technology investors in the US look at this, and they are first to market with the solution. And if they can tap into all the major channels like Netflix, like Disney, like others, then, you know, their technology will be utilized by most of the big advertising agencies through the world. So it will be huge. But they recently announced a move into another area, which is music. And they formed a music alliance with Red Light Management and Be Unique Records, where new videos and old videos, back catalog videos, which are called, of course, are viewed millions of times on YouTube, they can insert products into existing music videos, which has created a new opportunity for them to generate funds. And on the back of this, last week, of course, they announced at the end of last week, they announced they had raised 23 million sterling in a placing at 40p, and there was an open offer for further 3 million. And this would be used to accelerate sales and to accelerate the development of the platform. And at that juncture, both the chairman and the CEO, Stefan Berenger, said that they were very encouraged by progress. They were making good progress with their US partners, the tier one US media company, and with the Music Alliance. So that's why we're seeing the share price push higher. And indeed, as I'm looking at it now, we're seeing it pushing up to 52p, so well above the placing price.
Yes. So Al, you're on a sixth bagger there, pretty much.
Yeah, well, I'm just sticking with it because, you know, I think this is, you know, this is this company's got, you know, half a billion pound potential because of the industry it's in. You know, once all the major advertising agencies are using this instead of paying for advertisement breaks, as it were, then it's going to revolutionize the world of the media industry and product placement. You know, so you can look at an ad from an AC/DC video or an AC/DC song from 10 years ago and look at the band singing away, and maybe there'll be some cans of very current beer there in the foreground. You know, that's the technology that Myriad have got. And I think this is how technology can work and change the world. And, you know, they've got a great product here.
Yeah. Well, listen, you always stick with a company that is trend is good. The trend is improving, and they're a hot player in that trend. You know, and also if they can monetize that as well, if they're monetizing as well, it's good, because you know, there's plenty of times where there has to be proof of concept and there's proof of sales. And if you get proof of concept, it works. Does it work? And can you monetize it? You know, that's two things there. So sometimes you'll see a tech company rally strongly on proof of concept, and it seems like a hot space, but then they can't monetize it. And so it's a pop and drop. But obviously with Myriad here, of course, there's opportunity to monetize as well as it being proof of concept. So, yeah.
Well, I think also the board have been very, very cautious about issuing financial statements, and they've made revenue forecasts, and they've hit them at every point along the way, and that's key, you know. So you can have confidence in the management that they're not going to issue inflated expectations for revenue targets, but what they do publish and issue and project, they will deliver. And I think that's a very important thing for technology investors when they're looking at something like this. Can the company deliver? Yes, they can. They've done what they said they're going to do, but actually, you know, look at this, they've raised more money, etc. So you know, there's a very strong bull case here right now.
Marvelous stuff. Oh, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak to you next weeky.
Indeed, just speak to you next weeky.
Okay, it's time for top five most followed companies on Vox Markets. They are at 5, Salt Lake Potash, up 2% a day, 24.5. At 4, it's Providence Resources, down 6%, 7.9. At 3, Gritland Gold, 25.6, up 3.5%. At 2, Lansdowne Oil and Gas, down 10%, 2.275. And at 1, Loopup Group. And it's down after a big fall last week, down about 50%. It's bounced here, 10% up, or 11% up to 86.5. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, in fact, let's look at the most read as well. I always like to put these side by side so I can see which is getting the eyeballs. Let's look at the most liked first of all. Sorry, I'm just moving my tabs around to apologise. At 5, Kavanga Resources, 4 Norilsk Sky-style target areas selected in KSC. Alan talked about that. Location sizes at 4, new contract win and trading update. At 3, Bushveld Minerals, satisfied conditions of $65 million funding. At 2, Omega Diagnostics, interim results. And at 1, Symphony Environmental, positive coronavirus results there, yes. I'll hold a couple of shares in those, of course. Let's have a look at what the most viewed. Most viewed are Escapants there, Remote Monitored Systems, Total Rights, Gene Drive, Gritland Gold, Amiga Diagnostics, Interim Results, and Supply Atme Capital Trading Update. Thanks so much for that. Check it out, all those lists there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.